From the Lend to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of February, 2025. I'm Extension's Tug Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, the elevator that belongs to FS, right here in Champaign County. Nick Paulson will be here to discuss net farm incomes for grain farms in Illinois for 2024 and 2025. They'll be just about the same, he believes, but only if the government assistance continues to come from Washington, D.C. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And of course, I'll ask you to pick up your tickets or at least register for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm online at willag.org and at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium, celebrating 40 years, 10,000 episodes, and some 30,000 interviews.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.78 and a quarter. It was a penny and a half lower. The May contract at $4.93 and a half, down 0.75 cents for the day. December corn, new crop, $4.67, 3 lower. March beans at $10.24 and a half, down 6 3/4. The May at $10.41 and a quarter, 7 1/2 lower. And November soybeans at $10.45 and a half, down 5 1/2 cents. Bean meal futures down 40 cents. The bean oil 47 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red, down 6 3/4, settled at $5.66, and the hard red at $5.85, also down 6 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures $1.10 lower, the feeders off 27 1/2 cents, and lean hogs up $1.72 and a half for 100 pounds. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us, the FS Elevator here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
It's good to be with you, Todd.
Well, let's first talk about the upcoming Ag Forum that takes place in Washington, D.C. USDA will have some numbers, a supply and demand set of tables that come out for corn, soybeans, and wheat. The trade appears to They think USDA will put the corn acreage at 93.6 million acres. By the way, the number USDA has in that supply and demand table at the moment from last fall is 92 million. What are you thinking about?
You know, I could see where it could be 93.5 to 94.5. You know, quite a bit more than the 90.6 million acres that we planted last year. The one thing that keeps me thinking that it may not be quite as high as what some of the private analysts are is that the input costs, especially for corn, have not really dropped near as much as the price of corn has. So with those higher input costs, we may not see 4 million more, 3.5 to 4 million. We may only see 3 million more acres of corn compared to last year. So, you know, and again, this is just an economic analysis. It's not based on an actual farmer survey, so we won't get that number till March 31. But just based on the analytics and the economics, it sure looks like corn, with the corn-bean ratio as tight as it's ever been, that certainly favors more corn acres. But like I say, with higher input costs, it may not be quite as high as what some people are thinking otherwise would have happened.
Yeah, so it will be interesting to see what the agricultural economists, the number crunchers at USDA, come up with for this week's figure, as it's related both to acreage for corn and soybeans. As you suggest, the economic analysis with the high input prices may not point to the acreage that some of the trade is thinking about, particularly for corn. If they were to come in under 93, does that make a difference to the marketplace, or do they dismiss it thinking that the survey of farmers that comes out at the end of March will show a larger figure?
I think they'll put more weight, obviously, in the actual survey of farmers. So the number that we get tomorrow probably will influence the market a little bit, but I really think the trade will more than likely wait for the March 31 acreage number and you know, and trade that with more weight, with more emphasis than what they will tomorrow.
What's influencing the marketplace for corn, soybeans, and wheat today?
Well, we've had a nice run-up in corn ever since fall harvest lows. We gained a dollar in corn on February 18th, which was just a little over a week ago. We made our highs when corn was a dollar, was 504 on the board, and it was 404 on March futures, like I say, in the fall. So we had gained a dollar. And here this last week, we've lost 26 cents of that. So farmers have been selling, especially old crop corn and soybeans, on this rally. And so that dollar rally has now turned into a 75 cent rally, which is still good. On the soybean side, beans were 950 back in December. We hit a high of 1075 last 2 weeks ago. And so that was a $1.25 rally in the soybeans, and we've given back 50 cents of that. So the soybeans aren't performing quite as well, but that makes sense because we've got not as much demand for the soybeans as we do for the corn. The South American crop looks a little bit better with Argentina and Brazil getting some rains here in the last week or two, and always the uncertainty as to what China we'll do with buying soybeans from the U.S. versus buying from South America. So corn's hanging in there pretty well, beans not quite as well, and wheat didn't get much of a rally. We had a 75-cent rally from the January lows, and we've given back half of that, over half of that already. We've given back 42 cents. So corn is definitely the leader of the three commodities, followed by soybeans and then wheat.
Are the fundamentals going to suggest to you that it can remain the leader?
Yeah, you know, I think the farmer selling has, you know, we were expecting a little bit of a sell-off after that dollar rally. And now that we've seen that, I think we go back to trading fundamentals, which is the crop in South America, the double crop corn, got planted 3 weeks late. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a lower yield, but it certainly raises the odds and causes a little bit more uncertainty to the traders. You'd have to be very confident that they're going to have a normal corn crop. And at this point, we don't know that. So I don't think anybody really wants to sell this market off, you know, dramatically until we have a better idea of how the South American double crop corn is going to fare. On the other hand, you know, we've had a nice rally, and it's probably going to take a number below 93 million when that comes out on March 31st to really put some juice into this corn market. So until then, I think we're pretty fairly priced.
So we have a month and a half to figure that out. We'll also be in the beginning of the planting season here, mid-April, that is, for corn and soybeans across the Midwest. Farmers probably need to set themselves up so they're paying attention at that point as well as they're in the tractor cabs. What suggestions do you have for them?
Well, I think it's a percentage type of thing. You know, we typically want to sell corn in that April, May, June timeframe. That's typically the best time of year seasonally to sell corn and soybeans. With all the uncertainty about trade and tariffs, we may want to move that timeframe up a little bit and get a little bit more sold sooner rather than later. But farmers have done a good job of selling old crop corn and beans. We think farmers are 80 to 90% sold on old crop corn and beans. But once again, we're a little, well, not just a little, we're way behind on new crop corn and bean sales. I would say we're probably in the 10% range on corn, maybe as much as 20 on beans, 10 to 20% on beans. So we don't have much sold. And I know farmers don't like the price. $10 beans doesn't seem to, you know, generate much excitement, but it may be one of those years where we don't make a lot of money on soybeans. We just try to break even on soybeans and try to make our money in the corn market.
It is difficult to think about the marketplace, particularly as it's related to what your income has been in the past. Last year, this year, probably looking at a fifth of the income that you might have had in 2022. That must be weighing on the minds of producers really heavily.
It is. It is. That economic assistant package that was passed, we're certainly hopeful that that doesn't get cut, that the farmers get that money, because the marketplace is not going to guarantee a profit this year, especially in soybeans. So, you know, farmers are going to have to be shrewd marketers. Hopefully they saved up some money from the past and combine that with some government payments. Hopefully that'll allow us to get through this year, and hopefully things will look a little bit better next year.
Thank you much, Greg.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. Oh, and Greg will be looking forward to seeing you at the All Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday.
Looking forward to being there, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. He'll join us for the All Day Ag Outlook next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I hope you will too, but you need to pre-register. Do that right now at willag.org, willag.org. Most farmers have completed their 2024 financial statements, and they include some financial assistance from the federal government that passed late in the year. It appears financial assistance will come in 2025, and I asked Nick Polson, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, to talk a little bit about an article that he and his colleagues from the FarmDoc team, Gary Schnitke and Carl Zuloff, had written and posted earlier in the week to the FarmDoc Daily website as it's related to the net incomes and financial statements for 2025.
So we were looking at net farm income and where we think that number on average across Illinois will settle at for the 2024 crop year, and then looking ahead to the upcoming 2025 crop year. And sort of the theme of the article is that, you know, recognizing that we came off record average farm income number in 2022 for the state of Illinois, we saw prices come down and some of those production costs have remained sticky and at the high levels that they reached because of those high incomes in 21 and particularly in 22. And so what we're looking at for 24, and this even includes the economic assistance package, the $10 billion in payments that are expected to go out here in the next month to farmers that were passed in December. We're looking at farm income numbers in 2024 and then into 2025, kind of back down below, definitely below the $100,000 mark, back down to sort of that maybe $30,000 to $50,000 range, which is what we experienced on average during the last most recent downturn with lower prices and relatively high costs, which was 2014 through 2019.
You take up in the article time and risk. I'm wondering if you can explain what that means as it's related to net farm income.
Well, yeah, and that's the maybe a poor pun here, but the million-dollar question is, you know, how long will this last? You know, again, 2014 to 2019, that's what, a 5 to 6 year period? Are we in for a repeat of that? There's no reason to think it couldn't also last longer. Or, you know, we could have a crop failure in the U.S. in 2025 or in another major production area in the world. And maybe we see prices rise and we're talking about a totally different story, you know, 6-8 months down the road. You know, the concern is that if prices stay where they're at, there needs to be some cost adjustments made on the part of producers. You know, input costs need to come down or adjustments need to be made to get those costs down. You know, land is another market that we follow. It's you know, the most valuable input we have in agriculture. So looking at land values stabilizing, plateauing, cash rents stabilizing, hopefully declining from the farmer perspective. Those adjustments have to be made. You know, otherwise we're just in a cycle where every year moving forward at these price levels and these cost levels, there will be calls for more of this ad hoc support like we saw passed at the end of 2024. The challenge with that in our eyes and in the most economists' view is that, you know, while that aid is great in the short term and you can't argue that it's very much needed and justified, it makes some of those cost adjustments that we need to make even harder because, you know, it kind of alleviates the income problem in the short term, but we have that longer term systemic issue still in place.
Meaning that because there's money flowing from Washington, D.C. to the farm, that money also flows back to the price of inputs, which remains sticky?
Yeah, I mean, we're University of Illinois ag economists, so we believe firmly that markets work. And, you know, if you're providing cash to farmers, they're going to use that. And there's going to be at least some effect of continuing to support some of the input prices, farmland values, cash rent levels. And so again, it's this balance of the need for it in the short term, but also the need for cost adjustments given where prices are at in the long term.
How did you all summarize the article as you closed it out on the FarmDoc Daily website?
I think probably one of the big takeaways that actually at the end of the article is, you know, again, we talk about if things remain where they're at, and they can always change, like I said, but if price levels remain where they're at, if our cost structure remains where they're currently at, you know, we're looking at another year like last year where there will probably be some pretty strong calls for additional support through additional ad hoc aid to farmers for the 2025 year. The potentially bigger challenge with that, you know, beyond some of the issues I talked about in terms of how that might impact getting some of those costs down longer term, is that we're in, you know, a very budget-driven environment at the federal level, and it might be harder to get payments like that, you know, approved through Congress when it looks like we're going to be in a reconciliation process from a budget perspective federally and looking for ways to cut spending, not add new spending.
Those, of course, are issues that we can take up next week at the All Day Ag Outlook. You'll be there along with Gary Schnitke and Scott Irwin. We'll also have Jonathan Kappas on hand, Joe Jansen from the FarmDoc team, as well as Bruce Sherrick with us to take a look at land values. I'm really looking forward to having you all there. And thank you, by the way, for being part of the All Day Ag Outlook, a FarmDoc conference.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the invitation to be part of the program as usual. It's a fun event. Looking forward to a good crowd and some good discussion next week at the Beef House.
If you'd like to join us at the Beef House, certainly you can do that by registering today at willag.org, willag.org, or on the FarmDoc site at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Pre-registration closes on Friday. Be sure to get yourself registered before then. Don't wait. Do it right now at willag.org. The FarmDoc team will be there. The bevy of WillAg analysts will join us, along with John Reed, who is the director for the Center of Digital Agriculture. Oh, along with those analysts, Sue Martin will be flying in too. I hope you can join us. It should be a great day at the Beef House, but you need to register. Don't wait. Do it right now. The cost is just $40 through Friday. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. We've got quite a bit to get through. Let's check in on the South American crops to begin with. Where would you like to start there?
Well, let's talk about rain in Argentina. You know, this year started off and it was very dry in Argentina. A lot of people were concerned about it. And then somebody released the rumor that La Nina was coming and it was never going to rain in Argentina again. And La Nina never came. And finally it showed up in December and it stayed dry into the first days of January. And then we started seeing some rain and now we're turning the corner. La Nina is dying. And it looks like appropriately, we're going to see the weather change. And Argentina is going to see one wave after the other of rain in the southwest part of that country. And it's going to go from being pretty darn dry to being excessively wet. We have a good chance for flooding in northeastern La Pampa and from northwest to central parts of Buenos Aires. All of that occurs in this coming week. Probably looking at new rain totals that'll run from 4 to 10 inches. There'll probably be some local amounts of 10 to 12 inches, possibly. And it rains almost every day to some degree in the area from southern Cordoba and San Luis through Buenos Aires. So field progress is going to be on hold. The only crop that is currently at risk of being damaged is sunseed, which is currently maturing and being harvested. And the quality of that crop is going to be the pits by the time we're done with this week of weather. Now, just to the north of that, in Argentina's north, it is not going to rain for 10 or 11 days. And it's already dry up that way. It's also hot. Temperatures in the upper 90s to 108 degrees, and that is going to continue through this same rainy period and that the south endures. So very interesting Argentina weather right now.
Does that make its way into the southern parts of Brazil?
It does. Rio Grande do Sul will see some of that heat, and it actually looks as though rainfall is going to be below normal from southern Paraguay and Rio Grande do Sul, all the way through most of center south Brazil into the northeastern crop areas like Bahia and Minas Gerais. So this does include some important safrinha crop country. Right now, I don't think it's a big deal for some of those southern areas like Paraná and São Paulo and Mato Grosso do Sul because they do have good moisture profiles right now. But a week to 10 days from now, they may not be doing quite so well, and that may fuel a little market interest. Just to the north of that, though, in the most important safrinha corn production area in the country is Mato Grosso. And Mato Grosso is going to see a routine occurrence of rain and thunderstorm activity daily for the next 10 days. And that will slow down that late safrinha corn planting. I think they're going to have about 20 to 25% of that crop that's still going to be needed to be planted in March. The longer they're delayed, the bigger the potential decline in potential yields that may occur. So we're going to be watching that real closely.
In the United States, what are you watching here?
You know, the biggest issue in the U.S., in my opinion, is still that longer range outlook for the plains and the Western Corn Belt. And we have two weather patterns that have been dominating since the beginning of the cool season, and neither one is promoting a lot of moisture for the middle of the country. The biggest difference between the two patterns is one's warm, which we have now, and the other one's cold, which we'll have in another 10 days or so. And there's just not a lot of precipitation coming. So most of the hard red winter wheat country, the northern plains and the upper Midwest will continue to receive a lighter than normal precipitation through most of the first half of March. And that disturbs me because we do have moisture deficits in those areas. And the closer we get to warm weather, like in the latter part of April and May, the higher the potential is that we might have a little bit of dryness issue to deal with over the summer.
How do you put that into context with the beginning of the planting season about a month and a half from now?
Yeah, the biggest interest there is going to be that we will probably have an opportunity for aggressive planting to occur just simply because we aren't going to have a surplus of moisture around. We should get a few timely rain events to take place, and those timely rains should help to support field progress. But I don't think we're going to eliminate the moisture deficits down deeper in the ground. And so that is the reason for a close watch as we get, you know, into the real warmer days of late spring and summer.
Okay, thank you much, Drew.
All right, have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, where and right now you can sign up. Don't wait. Do it today for the All-Day Ag Outlook, Tuesday, March the 4th. That's next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And while you're there, you'll see in the agenda a way to purchase, or links at least, for books, and the authors will be on hand, including Neil Dahlstrom. He wrote Tractor Wars. That's also a documentary that will air just after Market to Market on Channel 12 this coming Sunday, March the 2nd. You can pick the book up and have Neil sign it. Of course, Scott Irwin and Jonathan Kappas will be there to sign their books too, but you need to buy a copy and bring it with you, so please do that when you sign up for the All Day Ag Outlook at willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.